This is VOA News. I'm Richard Green. The head of the World Health Organization expects more deaths to occur in Sudan due to outbreaks of disease and a lack of essential services amid intense fighting. The latest figures from WHO shows that 459 people have been killed and more than 4,000 injured in nearly 2 weeks of fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and rapid support forces paramilitaries.
On top of the number of deaths and injuries caused by the conflict itself, WHO expects there will be many more deaths due to outbreaks, lack of access to food and water, and disruptions to essential health services, including immunization.
WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says only 16% of health facilities were functioning in the Sudanese capital. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says he and Chinese leader Xi Jinping have had a long and meaningful phone conversation in their first known contact since Russia invaded Ukraine last February. The U.S. and South Korea say they'll boost their response to North Korea's persistent nuclear threat. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
They unveiled the new deterrence plan during South Korean leader Yoon Suk-yeol's state visit to the White House, where President Biden issued a blunt warning. A nuclear attack by North Korea on the U.S. or its allies is unacceptable.
And will result in the end of whatever regime were to take such an action.
The plan includes the U.S. docking nuclear-armed submarines in South Korea for the first time in more than 40 years.
We're not going to be stationing nuclear weapons on the peninsula.
Yoon said the new efforts are needed to reassure South Koreans. Sagar Magani, Washington.
For more on this and all the stories we're covering, visit us at voanews.com. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden will briefly visit the Pacific Island nations of Papua New Guinea in May. A spokesperson from the Prime Minister's office says President Biden will stop in the capital Port Moresby for 3 hours on his way to Australia to attend the Quad Leaders Summit. A source told Reuters that Biden is expected to meet with over a dozen Pacific Island leaders during his visit to Port Moresby. The meeting will be a significant move in U.S. efforts to push back against Chinese inroads in the region. It follows a meeting of Pacific Island leaders that Biden hosted at the White House last September. The Quad Summit is being held in Sydney on May 24th, with the leaders of India, Australia, Japan, and the United States attending. The writer suing Donald Trump for allegedly raping her nearly 30 years ago told jurors at a civil trial on Wednesday the former U.S. president sexually assaulted her and defamed her by lying about it. Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom reports.
E. Jean Carroll said in a Manhattan federal court, quote, "I'm here because Donald Trump raped me. And when I wrote about it, he lied and said it didn't happen. He lied and shattered my reputation, and I'm here to try to get my life back." Trump has denied the claims. She is suing Trump for defamation after he called her rape claim a hoax, lie, and, quote, complete con job on his Truth social media platform, and said she was not his type and that she made up the claim to sell her memoir.
That was Reuters correspondent Tamara Lindstrom. A transgender lawmaker in the northwestern U.S. state of Montana has been barred by Republicans from the state house floor. The AP's Ed Donahue explains.
Zoe Zephyr had told lawmakers who approved a bill barring gender-affirming care for minors they had blood on their hands. Before the vote, she said she will not back down on behalf of the LGBTQ community and her constituents.
I will always stand up for them, and I will always, no matter what happens today, stand up for democracy in the state of Montana.
The vote means Zephyr is barred from the House floor for the rest of the 2023 session. Republican David Beattie says what Zephyr did was an assault on representative democracy.
Worse yet, she actively participated in disrupting the lawful activities of this legislature.
Zephyr will still be able to vote remotely in Montana under terms of the punishment. I'm Ed Donahue.
A Brazilian dictionary has added Pelé as an adjective to use when describing someone who is exceptional, incomparable, unique. The announcement by the Michaelis Dictionary on Wednesday is part of a campaign that gathered more than 125,000 signatures to honor the late soccer great's impact beyond his sport. The three-time World Cup champion died in December at age 82 after a fight against colon cancer. The dictionary's entry says examples includes he is the Pelé of basketball, she is the Pelé of tennis. I'm Richard Green for VOA News.
As a mass exodus from Sudan continues, growing concerns after armed factions seize a public health lab that stores disease-causing pathogens.
The problem is that Sudan, with its long history of civil unrest, makes the delivery of basic health care extremely difficult and sporadic, such as childhood immunizations, against these specific agents.
Plus, will a long-awaited conversation between Chinese President Xi Jinping and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky have any impact?
The White House on Wednesday welcomed the phone call, with White House National Security Spokesperson John Kirby calling the conversation a good thing, but unsure if it would lead to a meaningful move toward peace.
And India's Supreme Court is holding landmark hearings on legalizing same-sex marriage. Today is Thursday, April 27th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Lori London in Washington. World powers continue to evacuate their citizens from Sudan's complex international operations, prompted by an eruption of fighting that has sent thousands of foreigners and many Sudanese people fleeing for safety. Meanwhile, there are new worries coming to light over public health in Sudan, coming to light after fighting broke out, of course, nearly 2 weeks ago. The World Health Organization is warning of a high risk of biological hazards after a lab in Khartoum with measles, polio, and cholera isolates was seized by one of the armed factions. The World Health Organization representative in Sudan called the takeover extremely, extremely dangerous. Infectious disease specialist Michael Sari with Occupational Health Consultants in Maryland tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the lab which was seized most likely did not contain the most dangerous types of biological agents.
It's unlikely Sudan, and that I know of, has any biosafety level 4 facility that contains these agents. And by dangerous agents, I mean those that can be readily transmitted. They're exotic agents. They pose a high individual and community risk of aerosol transmission, and they're very... They have high life-threatening capability, or other diseases that have high mortality, and more importantly, they have no effective treatment or prevention. So when you talk about these particular agents like polio, cholera, measles, we have the ability to treat cholera, to prevent the spread of polio and measles. The problem is that Sudan, with its long history of civil unrest, makes the delivery of basic health care extremely difficult and sporadic, such as childhood immunizations against these specific agents. So what's ironic about this whole thing is the highest risk group to suffer from the mishandling of these agents in this public health lab are actually the warring parties.
It sounds like you're saying, if anyone, they're most likely to infect themselves.
Well, they will spread it to the community because the community also is under-immunized. But these are endemic diseases to Sudan. I mean, they are present in Sudan. They're not exotic diseases like we see with swine fever or those types of diseases that are not present in the U.S. or Ebola, which is not really present in the U.S. endemically. These are endemic diseases that are actively circulating in the country.
When the WHO representative in the country is saying high risk of biological hazard, that sounds pretty scary to the outside world, to the people that don't know, like me.
Well, that's why I'm saying that there's a political agenda, and then there's the scientific or medical agenda that we're dealing with.
That's Dr. Michael Sari with Occupational Health Consultants in the U.S. state of Maryland, speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke by telephone Wednesday with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. It was the first known conversation between the two leaders since Russia's invasion of Ukraine last year. We hear more now from VOA's Steve Miller.
The call came after months of pressure from Kyiv for such talks, with Chinese state media stating Xi told Zelensky that China would send special representatives to Ukraine to hold talks with all parties seeking peace. Xi Jinping has thus far refrained from denouncing Russia's invasion of Ukraine and made a state visit to Russia last month. Since February, China has promoted a 12-point peace plan for Ukraine, greeted with skepticism from the West, but cautiously welcomed by Kyiv. The White House on Wednesday welcomed the phone call, with White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby calling the conversation a good thing, but unsure if it would lead to a meaningful move toward peace. The 14-month war is at a juncture, with Ukraine preparing to launch a counteroffensive in the coming weeks or months, following a Russian winter offensive that made only incremental advances despite the bloodiest fighting so far. Ukrainian officials have long been calling on Beijing to use its influence in Russia to help end the war. Steve Miller, VOA News.
The United States and South Korea signed a landmark agreement Wednesday that gives Seoul a greater decision-making role in U.S. contingency planning against a possible North Korean nuclear attack in exchange for Seoul agreeing not to pursue its own nuclear weapons program. During a news conference in the White House Rose Garden on Wednesday, the presidents of the United States and South Korea issued stark warnings to Pyongyang about how they'd react if North Korea were to use nuclear weapons. Details from VOA's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman, in Washington.
Responding to questions from reporters, U.S. President Joe Biden said the consequences would be dire for North Korea if it were to attack the United States, an ally or partner, with nuclear weapons.
It's unacceptable and will result in the end of whatever regime were to take such an action.
South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol said he and Biden agree that in the event of such an attack, there would be a swift, overwhelming, and decisive use of the full force of the alliance, including with U.S. nuclear weapons. During Yoon's state visit to Washington, South Korean and U.S. officials agreed Seoul will have a central role in strategic planning for the defense of the Korean Peninsula in exchange for a pledge from South Korea it will not pursue its own nuclear weapons arsenal. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
A writer suing former U.S. President Donald Trump in civil court took the stand Wednesday in New York to tell jurors that he raped her in 1996. Associated Press correspondent Julie Walker reports.
E. Jean Carroll told the jury of six men and three women, "I'm here because Donald Trump raped me, and when I wrote about it, he said it didn't happen. He lied and shattered my reputation, and I'm here to try to get my life back." The former advice columnist says it happened in the dressing room at Bergdorf Goodman after a chance encounter. The former president, who is running again, took to his social media platform to insist the allegations are fiction and that the case is what he calls a made-up scam. His comments prompted the judge to warn Trump's lawyers that he could bring more legal problems upon himself. Julie Walker, New York.
Here are some of the stories we are following from around the world. Alexei Navalny, the imprisoned Russian opposition leader, says he's now being investigated on terrorism charges that could give him another 30-year sentence. Navalny spoke by video link during a court hearing on Wednesday, the first time he's been seen in months. The UN Special Envoy for Haiti is urging immediate deployment of a specialized international force to counter escalating gang violence and support the understaffed and ill-equipped police force, warning delays could lead to a spillover of insecurity in the Caribbean and Latin America. And as Japanese startup company's attempt at the world's first commercial moon landing has failed, startup iSpace's Hakuto R Mission 1 lander, which was supposed to touch down on the moon's surface on Tuesday, most likely crashed on the lunar surface while it tried to land. This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Using data gathered by NASA's InSight lander, scientists led by Great Britain's University of Bristol were able to make the first detections and measurements of sound waves moving through to the core of Mars. The sound waves were generated by two Mars quakes, one whose epicenter was far across the planet and the other caused by a meteorite strike was a little closer to the InSight lander. From these sound measurements, the scientists were able to determine that the liquid core of Mars is smaller and a little denser than was previously thought, and that it isn't composed of only iron, but also large amounts of sulfur, hydrogen, and other elements. NASA terminated InSight's mission in December 2022, but the data it gathered during its four-year mission continues to be used to make discoveries such as these. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Lori London. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has backtracked on remarks he made Tuesday, saying the country would withdraw from the International Criminal Court, which has issued an arrest warrant for Russia's President Vladimir Putin. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
The president's office late Tuesday walked back comments Cyril Ramaphosa made that day at an earlier briefing, saying he misspoke. Ramaphosa had said the governing African National Congress, ANC, party would pull out of the International Criminal Court. His remarks sparked controversy as Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, who is wanted by the ICC for war crimes in Ukraine, is invited to an August summit in South Africa. As a signatory to the Rome Statute that established the ICC, Pretoria is required to arrest Putin if he sets foot in the country. But just hours after Ramaphosa said the ANC would quit the court in The Hague, his spokesman, Vincent Magwenya, said the remarks were an error.
South Africa remains a signatory to the ICC in line with a resolution of the 55th National Conference of the ANC held in December 2022 to rescind an earlier decision to withdraw from the ICC.
Magwenya said the correction followed an error made at a media briefing by the ANC on South Africa and the ICC, which he said the president had regrettably and erroneously affirmed. Ramaphosa had said there had long been a feeling in the governing party that the court treats some countries unfairly. The ANC wanted to pull out of the ICC some years ago, but was prevented from doing so by a South African court ruling that found it unconstitutional. It is not yet clear if Putin will attend a summit of the BRICS group of emerging nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. Even if he does, it is far from guaranteed that South Africa would arrest the Russian president. Pretoria refused to act on an ICC arrest warrant in 2015 when former Sudanese president Omar al-Bashir visited. The African National Congress Party is staunch friends with Moscow, which as leader of the Soviet Union supported its fight against apartheid's white minority rule. Kyiv also supported the ANC's struggle for democracy, but Pretoria has so far refused to condemn the Kremlin's invasion of Ukraine. Kate Bartlett for VOA News, Johannesburg.
India's Supreme Court is holding landmark hearings on legalizing same-sex marriage following petitions filed by several members of the LGBTQ community. Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi speaks to a gay couple who are among the petitioners on why the right to marry is important to them.
The commitment ceremony of this gay couple a year and a half ago had all the trappings of an Indian wedding. But in a country that does not recognize same-sex marriages, it had no legal validity.
I think the emotional part, I really wanted to call Abhay as my husband. Not only him, I mean, I would say my mother. So my family accepted us, right? I want my mother to call Abhay loudly, proudly, legally as her son-in-law.
The Supreme Court is holding hearings on petitions filed by several LGBTQ couples, including Abhay Dang and his partner Supriyo Chakraborty, to legalize same-sex marriage. Since they first met 10 years ago on a dating app, their journey has been like that of any heterosexual couple.
As part of the relationship, we both have grown in terms of, you know, how to deal with things and, you know, just to value each other more than, you know, just ourselves, more than just, you know, our own individual egos.
Now, they want the same rights as heterosexual couples.
That includes things like medical insurance, health, adoption, inheritance. None of those rights are available to us. Till today, if I need to fill a form, I still need to check mark as a single, right? So this thing does matter in our day-to-day life.
The pivotal moment that prompted them to approach the court came when both contracted COVID-19.
You know, it just made us realize that life is very, very fragile and you can't really predict what may happen in the next moment. We cannot sign documents for each other. Let's say I'm hospitalized and I need somebody to make a decision for me, like about a surgery or something of that sort. Supreme would not be able to take that decision.
The government has strongly opposed legalizing gay marriage, calling it an urban elitist concept that undermines social and religious values. Gay rights activists disagree.
Here we're looking at people who want to be, who actually want to do something that society holds a lot of value for, the institution of marriage, for example. And in many ways, marriage does denote commitment, caring for each other, loving each other.
While India is still a largely traditional country, petitioners have argued that societal acceptance will follow once law shows the way. Chakraborty said that since the court struck down a law criminalizing gay relationships 5 years ago, discussions about homosexuality have come more easily.
People don't say the word gay not very quietly anymore. People are very confident to start a conversation about it. And I'm not just talking about the LGBTQI community. I'm talking about everybody in general.
As they wait for the judgment, this couple hope that ceremonies like the one they held will count as a legal wedding someday. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
The worst may be over, but the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic, one of the biggest global crises in generations, has had far-reaching implications. And the World Health Organization says the impacts to mental health should not be taken lightly. Teen girls, in particular, have been struggling in this unprecedented mental health crisis. I had a chance to speak with Dr. Cheryl Green, assistant professor of psychiatry at Loma Linda University in California, and author of the book Heal Your Daughter, How Lifestyle Psychiatry Can Save Her from Depression. I asked why girls in particular have been suffering.
Yeah, that's a really good question. We can see the crisis right there in front of us. You know, the numbers are just off the charts, with 30% of girls having suicidal thoughts, 24% making a plan to commit suicide in the last year, 13% actually attempting suicide in the last year. So why is it so much higher? We can't kind of prove causality, but we do know some things have changed in the last few years for sure. There's been a lot more self-starvation, for example, with kids at home unmonitored eating junk food, what they say, snacks only. There's been more drug use in girls, certainly more cannabis wax pen addiction in girls. There's been more social media use at really addiction level, displacing real relationships and friendships that used to be kind of the mainstay of teen girl life. And there's been more school failure. You know, it's hard to learn math through a tiny little screen with a professor at a distance.
This has been caused by the pandemic and being home?
Yeah, this rise in the past year or two, we can't prove any specific thing about it, but these rates did rise during the pandemic when teen girls were home alone, unmonitored, isolated from their friends. We saw all of these things rise.
And is this a global problem, or is this mostly happening here in the United States?
Well, it is a global problem. There has been a study on first-year college students, you know, who are still teens, just one study that I'm aware of. He studied 8 developed countries and found that, yes, suicidal thoughts are at 17%, suicidal plans are at 9%, suicide attempts at 1%. So they're lower, but it is still way too high. So yes, it's global.
And your work and your book talks about solutions to address this growing crisis. What are some of the main points you think that parents should focus on?
Well, you said it, parents, because first off, there aren't enough teen hospital beds. There aren't enough adolescent psychiatrists or adolescent psychologists to deal with this problem. And the solutions likely aren't in more psychiatry and psychology as usual, more drugs and therapy, in other words. Really, with rates this high, to address the crisis, parents have to step up. They have to arrange a kind of a family-based therapy. And I think the things that will help most in that family-based treatment is really lifestyle changes. For example, to answer the problem of self-starvation, we have nutritional guidelines they can implement. Families can help their teens to implement the whole food plant-based diets. They can meet the basic necessities of mental health. That's one of the biggies. Another one they can implement is monitoring so that they aren't, you know, addicted to cannabis wax pen. They can monitor their girls. They can help them to do other things besides smoke the wax pen. They can help them connect with real friends. You know, the social media addiction that's displacing their real relationships. Families can support those real relationships. They can help teens to meet at home with their friends, even during lockdowns. And then also, they can help to address the stress and fear and trauma that all increased during the pandemic. Families were under financial stress. A lot of families kind of went under. A lot of girls had more academic stress, more academic failure. There was more sexual assault that happened during the pandemic. And there was certainly more fear during the pandemic. Many girls lost family members. So we actually know where the starvation on junk food ends. It ends with a lot of mental health issues. So if parents can address even that one aspect of lifestyle change, they'll be helping their daughters a lot.
Assistant professor of psychiatry at Loma Linda University and author of the book Heal Your Daughter, How Lifestyle Psychiatry Can Save Her from Depression. Cheryl Green, thank you so much for taking the time to share this important topic with us.
Thank you so much, Lori, for having me.
This has been International Edition on Voice of America. On behalf of our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Daryl Smith, thank you so much for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Until next time, I'm Lori London in Washington. Be well, be well, be safe, and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of every three employed women work in the agricultural sector or some agriculture-related activity. However, according to a new report from the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, globally there is a 24% gap in productivity between women and men farmers on farms of equal size. That's because in many countries, gender-based discriminatory practices prevent women from contributing equally to the agri-food sector. Women are paid 20% less than men. They do not own land in equal proportion to men, lack access to necessities such as high-quality seeds, irrigation, and fertilizers, and face discriminatory laws and practices, says the report. But in this day of increasing food insecurity, closing the gender gap in farm productivity and the wage gap in agricultural employment could increase global gross domestic product by nearly $1 trillion and reduce the number of food insecure people by 45 million. Women use fewer inputs, so they produce less. It's that simple, said USAID Administrator Samantha Power, quoting the author of a 2011 FAO report. Speaking at the U.S. launch of the FAO's Status of Women in Agri-Food Systems report, she said that although there has been some progress since then, it's not nearly enough.
If we are to see real progress, we do have to double down on our efforts to address systematic barriers. The laws that prevent women from owning land or operating bank accounts, or the norms that dictate that it is women who must care for children and homes.
Administrator Power then introduced USAID's new initiative, Generating Resilience and Opportunities for Women, or GROW. Through this program, she said, USAID will work with the U.S. Congress to double the funding to women across agricultural and food systems to $335 million.
We are going to help women build resilience to economic shocks that may make seeds and fertilizer unaffordable. We will support women to take on economic roles off the farm, and we will work to direct resources to women in humanitarian crisis zones.
GROW will provide the resources to address barriers, including laws that prevent women from fully participating in or equally benefiting from agricultural and food work, said Administrator Power. There are hundreds of millions of women who are ready, willing, and able to help us end hunger, if only we dismantle the barriers standing in their way.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.